He examined it closely. He hefted the organ in his hand like a butcher trying to gauge its worth by weight alone. He moved toward the other container, the one that had conveyed Mildred. As he did, he noticed the rigged back panel on Ryan's box hanging open a few inches. The man didn't look alarmed, but he glanced quickly around the chamber, dark eyes wide and bright. Rising up, Ryan leveled the Sig Sauer at him.
Don't move. Just stand there.
I wondered when one of you perverted little shits would try something like this.
Bob moved, unafraid, to a small metal panel inset on the wall beside the doorway. A half dozen colored buttons studded its surface. Ryan hadn't noticed it before.
Don't try it, Bob.
Bob granted him one glance of disgust and continued reaching. Ryan held the Sig Sauer in both hands, straight out in front of him, and brought the sights into line. The 9mm slug ripped Bob's right arm off at the shoulder socket. The arm flew across the room and hit the floor. Ryan stared, astonished. He had shot to wound, not to kill or maim. He hadn't expected the man's arm to be ripped off. Then he saw why it had happened. There was no blood, either from the ragged shoulder socket or from the stump of the arm. Instead, he glimpsed a gleaming tangle of twisted metal, cables, and wires. Bob glanced down at his disembodied arm, then back to Ryan.
Damn you! That construct alone cost the government $60,000! You've ruined it, you fucking renegade!
Bob stumbled toward Ryan.
I don't want to kill you. Don't move.
The man didn't seem to hear or care. Clumsily, he rushed at Ryan. Sidestepping quickly, Ryan delivered a roundhouse kick to the man's belly. The man didn't cry out or even gasp as he folded over Ryan's leg. Ryan then brought down the barrel of his gun against his skull. Bob made no movement afterward. Mildred pressed two fingers against the man's carotid artery.
He's alive, but his pulse is weird. Very fast and irregular. His body temperature seems unusually low, too. Turn him over, will you?
Ryan obliged, so Mildred could examine the stump of the shoulder. Within a raw orifice, color-coded wires intertwined, and a complex network of circuitry glistened wetly.
Looks like a Teflon socket.
A small, transparent plastic tube corkscrewed within the hollow socket. A pale, greenish liquid dripped from it to the floor, crawling across the stone. Ryan touched it.
This isn't blood. A lubricant, maybe.
Mildred dipped a finger into the spreading puddle, then brought it to her nose.
I think it might be some kind of coolant.
A coolant?
Yeah, like Freon or something.
Mildred undid the man's shirt, tossing his tie aside. His flesh was very pale, an unhealthy mushroom shade. A 5-inch pink scar ran down his clavicle, marked on either side by a saddle-stitched pattern.
He's one of the Zipper Club.
What's that?
Old medical slang. Means he either had open-heart surgery, like a bypass operation, or he's had a heart transplant. See if you can get his mouth open.
Mystified, Ryan did as she said, squeezing the hinges of the man's jaw until his mouth gaped open. To his surprise, Mildred stuck a finger inside Bob's mouth, under his saliva-slick tongue. After a moment, she withdrew it, wiping her finger on her jacket.
Why did you do that?
Testing his body temperature. If it was normal, his mouth would be hot, even if his epidermis isn't.
Well, is it hot or not?
Not. Very cool. In fact, probably not over 75 degrees Fahrenheit. It's almost as if the poor bastard is walking around in a constant state of hypothermia.
The doctor straightened and went to retrieve Bob's arm. Ryan studied the badge pinned to the man's lapel. It bore very little information beyond his picture, his name, and a red dot about a quarter of an inch in diameter. The dot looked as if it had been affixed to the card somehow, and it bore an odd reflective sheen. Mildred returned with the arm. Holding the limb by the wrist and the bicep, she bent the elbow back and forth.
This is extraordinary, Ryan.
How so?
It's a bionic prosthesis, but it's about 10 years beyond anything in use before the Holocaust. Touch the hand.
Feels like skin.
Exactly. Not latex or rubber, but a synthetic organic equivalent of flesh. Perfect in every detail. Right down to the texture and implanted hair follicles, which is pretty amazing, considering a human hair is only 60 microns wide.
You doctors didn't have this in pre-dark days?
We had something like it, used mainly to speed the healing process of burn victims, and it was hardly the best solution. This stuff is almost indistinguishable from normal epidermal tissue.
How's it made?
In my day, We used a form of silicon gel and plasma. A synthetic skin this close to the original has to be developed by genetic engineering, maybe through a form of cloning.
So, it looks like Lars was telling the truth about this place.
As much as he understood. Make no mistake, from what we've seen so far, and that's very damned little, I judge the people who live here are a hell of a lot more dangerous than the Hellscale crowd.
Yeah, Lars said that too. What do you want to do with this guy?
Your call. You shot him.
Ryan dragged Bob to a far corner, then used the man's tie, belt, and shoelaces to gag and bind him. It was difficult since he had only one arm, so Ryan bound his wrist to his ankles, bending his legs up behind him. He briefly contemplated dumping the man down the nasal passage. Frater would have done it, and a few years before he might have done it too. But it didn't seem right to take the life of a helpless man. Aside from that, there was a tactical wisdom in sparing the man's life. He and Mildred were the invaders here. If there was even a marginal chance of reasoning with the Anthill residents, it made sense not to arouse their anger. He returned to Mildred, and they approached the doorway. The panel was still up. Mildred suddenly put a hand on his chest.
Wait! I think there's a photoelectric eye there. Just strolling through the beam might trigger an alarm.
Ryan produced Bob's ID badge and clipped it to the breast pocket of his coat.
Already thought of that. This dot looks like a light-sensitive cell. Seen them before in other installations.
I get it. If the cell is of the same electrochemical spectrum as the beam, it will interact with it, not react to it, like a passkey.
You said it better than I could have. Let's give it a try.
Hands on their weapons, they walked up the steps and through the doorway, past the wall panel. Nothing happened.
You were right.
You thought of it first.
They found themselves in a squarish tunnel. The light from two wire-encased electric bulbs glistened from the cold rock walls. The crude marks of tools showed on the stone.
So far, this place doesn't seem to be the high-tech heaven Hellstrom made it out to be. Even the worst redoubt we ever visited wasn't shipped out of rock.
A faint, musky, but cloying odor took them by the throats and tried to force out coughs. A powdery coating of dust covered the tunnel floor.
They wouldn't win any awards for good housekeeping either.
A wedge of light glimmered before them. They slowed their pace and sidled along the wall. The tunnel opened out into an enormous vaulted chamber, its ceiling almost lost high in the darkness. Both of them jolted to unsteady halts, forgetting the kill zone they were braving. They had to blink and shake their heads, fighting to absorb what they were seeing.
Mother of God and sweet baby Jesus in her arms.
Ryan seemed to have lost the capacity for speech. The vast room was filled, almost as far as the eye could see, with crates, boxes, stacks of books, electronic gadgets, furniture, sleek and shining wheeled vehicles, paintings, and musical instruments. The huge room was a museum of mechanics, art, literature, seemingly of the entire pre-dark culture. There was simply far too much to absorb, much less identify. Many of the objects and items were unfamiliar to Ryan, but he knew the thousands of items in the gargantuan vault represented the aspirations of a destroyed and dead society.
What was that JB said? The mother of all stockpiles?
John had no idea, did he?
The four companions walked toward the eatery after Mildred and Ryan departed. No one was on the street. As early as it was, there should have been a few people, if only those staggering home from an all-night drunk.
From the oppressive atmosphere, it appears friend Ryan's assessment was correct.
No one responded. All of them had stayed awake most of the night, huddled in Christy and Ryan's room, talking in whispers, planning courses of action. They had devised an escape plan, with Ryan briefing them on the location of the armory where their guns were stored and how much opposition they could expect. They had settled on one of the dune buggies parked in the lot, as well as an escape route, using Hellstrom's map of Mount Rushmore and the surrounding environs as a blueprint. For the plan to work, it was crucial that they all behave as if they suspected nothing, to maintain the facades of trusting souls, worrying only about their loved ones, off on a mission in the service of Hellscale. They entered the eatery. The heavy-set, wart-faced woman behind the counter glanced at them with sullen eyes. She didn't greet them.
Breakfast, my good woman. First and foremost, deliver to us a pot of your delectable coffee.
The four companions took seats around a table.